Hey guys, welcome to the 330 Sports Show. Today is Tuesday, October 12th, 2021. My name is Justin Coffin. I'll be your host. We are live from downtown Youngstown in the Youngstown Studios. And what we're going to get into today, you know, our normal Tuesday, always a loaded show. We're going to get into top five takeaways from the Browns, top five takeaways from the Buckeyes. We're going to look at the NFL slate from this weekend and look back on an absolutely crazy weekend of college football with the NCAA. We're also going to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly from this weekend. And, you know, last night there was some ugly, unfortunately, in the news. So we'll get to that all soon. But first, you know, if you take a look at this slide, if you're watching, just want to remind you to follow the 330 Sports Show on social media, on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. You can always listen through Youngstown Studios on any of the podcast platforms or watch. Most of you are probably watching on Facebook or Twitter or on YouTube. Those are our three platforms we broadcast out of. So make sure to follow us, give us a like, subscribe. You can follow all of our different shows through that as well. So, you know, those are different ways to follow us. I want to intro real quick our Thursday thought segment. We're going to feature Ashley Collins. She is of Bally Sports Ohio. If any of you have ever watched Drennan Live, she is the co-host of that show out of Cleveland. So we're going to talk all things Browns, Cavs, Indians, now Guardians, and just different things about Cleveland. She is actually cousins with the Los Angeles Chargers head coach Brandon Staley. We'll have her talk a little bit about that. And she has some other family members in the sports world. So she will join us Thursday with our normal Thursday segment of the Browns, Buckeyes, and high school football with Steve Leslie from YSN, who will join us as well. So, so back to today. We're going to start with the Browns and the Chargers game. So obviously a very, very crazy game from this past weekend. You know, the Browns and the Chargers, the Browns came in. I think it was a pick 'em and, you know, the line sort of changed place, but it really didn't get more than a 2-point line one way or the other. I actually did pick the Chargers to win, but I did not think the game was going to be as high scoring as it was. So 47-42, Los Angeles beat the Browns. Obviously, the Browns played their butts off, especially on the offensive side of the ball. Defense is another story. But this was the most interesting fact I took away from the game. So the Browns were the first team in NFL history to lose when scoring 40 or more points and having zero turnovers in game. Previous teams were 463-0 going into Sunday's game. So pretty crazy slate there. So another interesting fact from this weekend, there was just a ton of injuries. So going into the game, the Browns were without Jadeveon Clowney. He had an elbow injury, which he should be back and should be fine. Greg Newsom has missed the last 2 weeks now. He hopefully will be back this coming week. Greedy Williams left the game a little bit early with a shoulder injury. Denzel Ward left the game with a neck injury. He was banged up a little bit. Hopefully he's okay. And then MJ Stewart, they just put on IR. He got banged up a little bit with a hamstring injury. So those were just the losses on the defensive side of the ball that either weren't available before the kickoff or they lost during the game. And the Chargers with that high powered offense, you can't go in undermanned and expect to come out a lot of times with a great defensive effort. So on the offensive side of the ball, the Browns were and have been without Jarvis Landry basically for the last 4 weeks because he got hurt in the first series of the Houston game. They were without Jed Wills, their left tackle, which was actually a good thing because he needed to rest that ankle. He's been hobbled the last 3 or 4 weeks on that. Jack Conklin, who is an all-pro right tackle on the opposite side. So the Browns were without both starting tackles for the majority of this game. I can't remember when Jack Conklin left, but you know it was early enough that it did impact some of the later drives. And then Chris Hubbard, who is the backup to both of those guys, just went on the IR and will have season-ending surgery. So the Browns are, you know, without those tackles, which is a huge loss and a test to their depth. So they're really going to have to plug some guys in. Blake Hance played pretty well. And they're, you know, they have the rookie out of Cincinnati. So hopefully those guys are able to come in, step in, play well enough to keep Baker Mayfield upright, you know, push that run game forward and give the wide receivers enough chances to, or at least enough time to hopefully get open. Another takeaway. So the Browns are a very, very good team. They're one of the top four or five teams in the AFC for sure, possibly in the NFL. Now they're sitting at 3-2 right now, but you know, your two losses are you had a big lead against the Chiefs, ended up losing that by 4. You had a big lead against the Chargers, ended up losing that game by 5 on the last drive of the game. But the Browns, to be a great team, they must learn to finish these games. So again, in this game, the Browns were up 27-13 in the third quarter and 42-41 with 3 minutes to go in the game, and they went 3-and-out, and they did that against Kansas City as well. There's some questionable play calling, you know, that Kevin Stefanski, who we love as a Browns head coach, but he has, and he even admitted in his press conference, he's got to be better. And, you know, I'll get into the point of sometimes he's more aggressive, sometimes he's not, but we'll talk about that in just a little bit here. Some of the other takeaways from this game. So, you know, again, it's aggressiveness at times, conservative at times. So the Browns really didn't test the Chargers secondary deep. I think they had one pass that maybe traveled over 20 yards in the air. And again, don't get me wrong, their offense put up 42 points and had over 500 yards, you know, total offense. So it's not like they had a bad offensive performance. It's just, I don't feel like they have been, they were as aggressive in this game as they have been in past games. So before the half, it sort of felt like they were playing for a field goal. You know, maybe they were, maybe they weren't, but that's what it kind of gave me the feel. They got that Chargers turnover, and then they really could have punched it in, and you know, put the Chargers in a deeper hole than they were, but you know, settled for a field goal. And then on that last drive of the game, they had the ball with about a minute and 35 seconds left. And, you know, they even admitted in a press conference, they were sort of playing for a Hail Mary opportunity. With a minute and 40 seconds left, you know, you hit a couple 20-yard passes or 15-yard passes, you chunk them a little bit. I think we would have had the opportunity to, you know, get down inside the 30, the 20, and not make it such a, you know, a heave there or a prayer at the end. So that was another takeaway of just, you know, I kind of wasn't sure about the play calling there because we were just checking down 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 yard passes. And the clock just kept running and running and running. So that didn't give them much of an opportunity at the end. Also, Odell Beckham only targeted 3 times in this game. He had 2 catches for 20 yards, I believe. But the one incompletion to him was a huge drop, and it was a perfect pass by Baker. Odell Beckham just dropped it, and it was on a 4th-and-2 play inside the Chargers red zone. So that was a big, that was basically the equivalent of a turnover. And then Trustin Mayfield, you know, we ran that draw on 3rd-and-10 with about 2 minutes and 30 seconds left on the clock, where a first down, you get a first down in that situation, you very well could put that game away, or, you know, you probably needed 2 first downs there. They didn't get any. They punted away, and Jamie Gillen, that's a whole nother situation. The Chargers actually started on the Brown side of the field for that final drive. So that's a little bit frustrating because I think, you know, Andy Reid has the trust in Patrick Mahomes. You know, Staley has the trust in Justin Herbert, you know, and the list of quarterbacks, you go down the list, Aaron Rodgers, and some of these other big names, you know, their head coaches are putting the ball in their hands, letting them make plays. I feel like Baker is a very good quarterback, but I don't feel like he's trusted enough right now to, you know, to go out and just win the game for the Browns. All right. So just a few more things here. Browns, the offense. So again, the Browns had a great day offensively. They had 531 total yards of offense. Odell, however, only had 20 of those yards. So, you know, just a very, very, very small fraction of those yards went to Odell Beckham. You know, that's not even 5% of the total offensive output, which is crazy. But Baker did bounce back, had a nice game, 23 of 32 for 305 yards, two touchdowns. David Njoku with his biggest game in a while, seven catches, 149 yards and a touchdown. Nick Chubb had 21 carries for 161 yards and a touchdown. And Kareem Hunt continues to be a great all-around back. 12 carries for 61 yards, two touchdowns. Also had a few catches in the passing game. The Browns owned the possession again. They had 35 minutes of possession to the Chargers, only 25. So that means the Chargers, in the 25 minutes they possessed the ball, put up 47 points, which is insane. You know, almost 2 points a minute, which is, you know, not good. So the Browns defense has to get them off the field. And credit, again, should go to the Chargers. They were able to, you know, they were aggressive. They were, you know, they went for it on fourth down consistently, but they were 4-4 in the red zone for four touchdowns. And I think also converted fourth downs, which is great for them, not for us. The Browns rushing game had 230 yards total for 6.6 yards a carry, which is just phenomenal in the NFL. And the passing game, again, 305 yards passing, and you know, which is 13.3 yards a completion. And again, Baker Mayfield was only sacked one time in this game with two backup tackles. You're playing against the likes of Joey Bosa and a pretty good front for the Chargers. So good job by the offensive line overall, especially in the run game and allowing Baker enough time in the passing game. Now, another thing, I am not someone who likes to blame officials for, you know, they are not the reason the Browns lost this game. Let me make that, you know, first and foremost, that point. However, they aren't the reason the Browns lost this game. However, it could have been a reason that prevented them from winning the game. If that, that might sound contradictory, but it makes sense to me. But that defensive pass interference, it was on fourth and four that led to a game tying touchdown. And if you are watching and you can see this picture, Mike Williams, who had a phenomenal game for the Chargers, but he is absolutely just pulling down AJ Green. And AJ Green gets flagged for that call, which ended up being a 33-yard penalty. The Chargers, again, that would have given the Browns the ball around midfield, and they could have went down and scored. Even a field goal would have helped. But that was possibly a 10 or even a 14-point swing on that play. And again, the refs, the Browns need to put that game away and not put the ball in, or put the calls in the refs' hands to change the outcome of that game. So on that same play as well, if you go back and look, I don't have a picture of it, but Tack McKinley was basically just yanked down and preventing, you know, him from getting to Justin Herbert. And just a few other calls, you know, on the Hail Mary play, there was Njoku got tripped. And, you know, if that, I just feel like as a Browns fan, if that was us, and that would have happened, that would have been called. And, you know, it is what it is. But again, you can't put yourself in that situation. You score 42 points, you got to go out and win that game. So those were my thoughts with that. Now, real quick, a couple Baker Mayfield stats. A lot of people, you know, a lot of times it's the minority, but they are the vocal minority that are attacking Baker Mayfield and blaming him for this loss. I am not in that camp. I think Baker Mayfield played well enough to win us this game. And I thought he did an overall very, very good job at quarterback for the Browns. But looking back at his numbers, these are throughout the first five games. So we're a little bit past the quarterway of the season here. So in the first quarter, Baker Mayfield is 80% completion percentage with 110 QBR rating. Anything above 100 is very good. In the second quarter, that percentage, that completion percentage drops to 60 and his QBR goes down to 83. In the third quarter, listen to this, 88% completions for the year, which is amazing. That is quick math, seven out of every eight completions, and then 133 quarterback rating, which is again, excellent. But in the fourth quarter, here's the big stat. He is 55% completion percentage, which is his lowest out of any quarter, and 76 QBR, which is the lowest out of any quarter. Again, that could be a trend. It could be a coincidence. I don't know exactly, but the Browns have, in their two losses, have experienced fourth quarter troubles, and not to mention that Vikings game they did win. So, they really do need to be able to close and finish out games. So that is kind of my big thought with that. The last two possessions, the Browns had 25 total yards. And at one point in late in the fourth quarter, they had a 94% win probability based on analytics. So, unfortunately, that 6% won out. But I think this game hopefully makes the Browns a better team. And I think if they play the Chargers again, whether it's in the playoffs or I guess it would have to be in the playoffs, I think they come out and win that game, especially if they are healthy. So looking forward, the Browns are now 3-2. Again, 3-2. Most Browns seasons, we are extremely happy. We're jumping up in the air. We're thrilled with that. 3-2 is not a bad record. It's a solid record. But looking at the schedule, they're in the toughest part of their schedule right now. You just played the Chargers. You got the Cardinals coming up at 5-0, the only undefeated team left in the NFL. Broncos are 3-2, but I think they're starting to show their true colors here. And then Halloween, you got the Steelers, which no matter what the Steelers record is, it's still the Pittsburgh Steelers, and that's going to be a battle, and that's going to be a rivalry game. So this weekend, again, the Cardinals at home, 4:00, and the Browns actually play, 4 days after that at home again against the Broncos, which is a Thursday night game. And then, as I mentioned, Halloween against the Steelers. Now let's real quick take a look at the rest of the NFL. I'm not going to go through each of these scores, but just some notable games. The Bills just absolutely dominated the Chiefs to win that game 38-20. The Cardinals, who come to town this weekend, beat the 49ers 17-10, kind of a low scoring game. Basically, the whole Giants offense against the Cowboys was out, so the Cowboys were able to kind of run that game out of hand at 44-20. The Broncos had a late push, but weren't able to knock off the Steelers. So the Steelers get back to 2-3, snap a 3-game losing streak. The Bengals and the Packers. If you did not see that game, there was about 5 or 6 missed field goals in that game, which was just like, they were just all over the place. Mason Crosby, who's usually very reliable, missed. The Bengals kicker, who is a rookie, he's had a couple game winners already this year, hit a 56-yarder off the crossbar, or off the upright, excuse me, and lost that for the Bengals. But the Bengals have been impressive so far this year. Also, the Titans, in a battle of former Ohio State guys and Urban Meyer's first game since his controversy. But Mike Vrabel and the Titans, who sort of an average team this year, they were able to just dominate the Jaguars 37-19. The Lions, once again, unfortunately lose on the last play of the game. Dan Campbell, who I've talked about a few times, is like Mr. Football. He is just like a warrior. Ended up, he was in tears after that game. But the Lions have lost 2 games now this year of over 50-plus yard field goals. One was the NFL record against, Baltimore, who beat them on a 66-yarder. That's the first time in NFL history a team has lost 2 games on that at the buzzer. Tom Brady just continues to dominate. The Bears and Justin Fields look good. We'll talk about the Raiders and John Gruden here in a little bit. And, they played the first game in London. The Falcons were able to dominate that one. on Thursday night, the Rams took out the Seahawks, but Russell Wilson is going to now miss the first couple games of his career. His finger, I believe, is broken, so he's going to have surgery on that. And then the Colts blew it last night. The Ravens did everything they could to come back and win, and they won last night in overtime. So looking at the AFC North, the Ravens, who, you know, a lot of people predicted the Ravens to be a very good team, but I think after their injuries, thought the Ravens would probably struggle a little bit, but they're sitting right now at 4-1. They've knocked off the Chiefs. They've knocked off the Colts. They've knocked off the Lions. I'm trying to think of their other win, but they've been pretty solid this year. They did lose to Vegas. That was in the opening week. So they've racked off four straight wins. The Bengals sitting at 3-2 and the Browns sitting at 3-2. Both Ohio teams look good so far, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And then the Steelers got a big win this weekend. They are sitting at 2-3. So we'll talk more about their upcoming games for this Thursday, for this weekend on Thursday. And, you know, we'll move on from that. So I want to get into real quick the good, the bad, and the ugly from this weekend. So I saw this fact, you know, when I was a young kid, I remember Deion Sanders, and I think that was the first football jersey maybe I ever bought. It wasn't Atlanta Falcons. I think it was when he was with the Dallas Cowboys, but it was a number 21. I also loved Eric Metcalf, who played for the Browns. So I think those were maybe my first two football jerseys I ever bought, was a Deion Sanders Cowboy jersey and a Cleveland Browns Eric Metcalf jersey. But on this day, way back in, I believe that was like 92, Deion Sanders played for both the Atlanta Falcons and then played a playoff game for the Atlanta Braves. So that's pretty remarkable. You're not going to see too many people do that. And so I just thought that was a little pay homage to Deion Sanders, who is now a head coach of, I believe it's Jackson State. The bad. Unfortunately for Steeler fans, Juju Smith-Schuster will be out for the season with a shoulder injury. The Giants, like I mentioned, lost not just Saquon Barkley, but I believe they lost Daniel Jones and another offensive weapon. So they are just decimated right now on the offensive side of the ball with injuries. And then, as I mentioned as well, Russell Wilson is going to miss the first games of his career with a broken or something with his finger is messed up. So hopefully he will get back. The Seahawks are going to be led at quarterback by Geno Smith, former West Virginia product, who will be under center when they take on the Pittsburgh Steelers this weekend. And then the ugly was ugly. The ugly was ugly. So this weekend set a record for most extra points missed on any given weekend in the NFL. So with 13 extra points missed, the Chargers had two of those, but you know, just a really, really bad weekend for kickers. And then John Gruden, Urban Meyer was probably extremely happy to hear the John Gruden news, because it kind of takes the spotlight off of him. But John Gruden is the first NFL coach to, well, he resigned, but he was basically fired, with the NFL doing some probes and looking into some things with emails. John Gruden, you know, we're not going to get into what he said or didn't say or type or whatever you want to say, but it was basically like some racist, homophobic, misogynistic type comments. And, you know, that just, you know, it was 10 years ago, and whatever you might think or not think, if you're putting that in writing, it's not good. So John Gruden not going to be around for the Vegas Raiders anymore. And, you know, I don't really want to comment on it, because I think John Gruden has been a very, very good coach, if not a great coach over his career. But, you know, the unfortunate thing is you can't say and you can't do things like that. And, you know, whether it was 10 years ago or yesterday, you know, you're going to get in trouble for it if it comes out. So unfortunate for him, unfortunate for the Raiders, but, you know, move forward, and it is what it is. All right, Let's switch now to Ohio State. The Buckeyes just had a dominating win against the Maryland Terrapins this weekend, 66-17. Maryland is not a bad team. I wouldn't say they're a super good team. They're sort of in the middle. I think they're going to be like a 7-5 type team by the end of the season. They'll make a bowl game, but Ohio State just blew the doors off of the Maryland Terrapins. So let's get into some takeaways from this game. So Ohio State, in my opinion, now looks like a top team in the country. They've played six games. You can argue those might be the six easiest games on their schedule, you know, outside the Oregon game, maybe five of the six easiest games on the schedule. With six to go, I'll show you what's on the horizon for the Buckeyes coming up down the line. But halfway through the season, they have a bye week this week, so they can sort of rest, recuperate, and get ready for the second half of the year. CJ Stroud is starting to look the part. He is just a fantastic quarterback. He was kind of ripped in the media and ripped by some fans after, you know, some subpar performances. But look at these, especially these last two games. And he didn't play against Akron to rest his shoulder. So, you know, that kind of got him right. But versus Rutgers, 17 of 23, 330 yards, five touchdowns. Versus Maryland this past weekend, 24 of 33, 406 yards and five touchdowns. So 10 touchdowns the last two games to no interceptions. And he only played about 75% of the snaps in those two games because they were up by so much they were able to sort of rest him a little bit and give Kyle McCord and Jack Miller some playing time there. And he is a potential, him and Travion Henderson are top seven right now, again, in the Heisman Trophy, gambling lines for Vegas. So looking forward to seeing what he can do the rest of the year. His growth, his improvement, and his health have all been very, very vital to the Buckeyes' success this year. Let's talk about Chris Olave. Last week, I talked about Chris Olave and just sort of saying, you need to appreciate this guy while he's here. He is continuing to move up and up and up the all-time Buckeye list for top receivers. In 2021, this season, he has 30 catches for nearly 500 yards, seven touchdowns, and he's averaging about 16.5 yards a reception. For his career, he has 141 receptions, which puts him eighth all-time. KJ Hill is first with 201. This for his career as well, 2,269 yards receiving, which puts him eighth all-time. However, he's only about 600 yards behind the all-time leader, Michael Jenkins, with at least seven games left to play. So he's has a very, very good chance of breaking that. And before it's all said and done, as long as he stays healthy, he's going to be Ohio State's all-time leading receiver in touchdowns. He has 29 touchdowns, which is third all-time. He has five in the last two games. And David Boston, he's only five behind. David Boston is at 34 all-time. So Chris Olave, very, very good opportunity to become the Buckeyes' number one receiver of all time in at least two categories. The offense is just absolutely elite. So they have taken 396 snaps this year. That for 3,379 yards, which puts them at 8.55 yards a play. I don't think any other team in the country is above like 7.5. So they are averaging like a full yard a play better than the next closest team. They have scored 34 touchdowns on offense, 563.2 yards a game, which is just incredible. This passing leader is CJ Stroud with 66% completions on the year, just shy of 1,700 yards, 18 touchdowns, three picks on the year. The rushing leader is pictured right there is Travion Henderson, 70 attempts for 612 yards, which puts him about 8.7 yards a carry, and he has nine touchdowns, and that's just rushing. He has a bunch of yards receiving as well. And then the three receiving leaders, the three-headed monster for Ohio State at the receiving position, Garrett Wilson, 31 catches, 546 yards, 6 TDs. Chris Olave, 30 receptions for 494 yards, 7 touchdowns. And Jackson Smith-Njigba, 23 receptions for 452 yards and 3 touchdowns on the season. So the offense is absolutely loaded. And that doesn't even include, Jeremy Reckert, who's one of the best tight ends. There are any other backup running backs. Emeka Abuka, who's a great number 4 receiver. So one did you know fact I always like to try to put in here. So did you know Ohio State has a pick 6 in the last 4 games? So that is the longest streak in school history. Against Tulsa, Cam Martinez returned one for a touchdown. Against Akron, Ronnie Hickman, who's quickly becoming one of the best players on the Buckeyes defense, had one. Against Rutgers, Denzel Burke, who is pictured there, number 29, had a touchdown. And then Craig Young did it against Maryland. So what I thought was kind of cool too is Ryan Day gave the game ball to Kerry Combs. Kerry Combs has been picked apart by the media, by fans, by a lot of people, especially after those first 2, if not 3 games against Oregon and against Minnesota, with, you know, just the defense not playing as well as they should. But he's stuck around. He didn't quit on the team. He's kind of that rah-rah guy. He's the secondary, you know, he's kind of the main like DB coach. So good for Kerry Combs. Good for Ryan Day for giving him the game ball, because Kerry Combs is a true Buckeye. You know, obviously maybe not the best defensive coordinator, but a good coach and someone that you want around your program. So here is the Ohio State Buckeye slate coming up. They are on a bye, as I mentioned, this weekend. So we'll throw some other information on Thursday at you for the Buckeyes, but the remaining games are at Indiana. They are home for number 7 Penn State. They're at Nebraska, home for Purdue, home for Michigan State, and then at Michigan on the Saturday after Halloween. So looking at their schedule, they have 3 ranked teams left: number 7 Penn State, number 8 Michigan, and number 10 Michigan State. Not to mention Iowa right now is the number 2 ranked team in the country. So you're going to have to beat all 4 of those teams if you would like to make the college football playoff. If Ohio State does that, then they should have zero trouble getting into the playoff as a 1-loss Big Ten champion. But again, that remains to be seen. You take it week by week. Penn State is going to be a very difficult opponent. Michigan, always a rivalry game. That's going to be tough. Michigan State, I believe, is a little overrated right now, but they're sitting at number 10. And they're number 10 for a reason. You know, they've done a very nice job, and they've defeated everyone in front of them. All right, let's take a quick look at the AP Top 25. We had a crazy, crazy, crazy weekend of college football. So number 1, Alabama goes down. They lose to Texas A&M on a last-second field goal, 41-38. Jimbo Fisher now becomes the first coach that was a former assistant of Nick Saban to beat him. They are now 1-25 against Nick Saban, but 1-0 in the last game. Iowa comes back late to beat Penn State in a very, very good game. So Iowa is up to number 2 now in the poll. Penn State drops to number 7. Oklahoma. Oklahoma had no business beating Texas. Texas gave that game away in the Red River rivalry. I think it was a 55-48 final, but you know, give credit to Oklahoma. They won the game, but Texas, in my opinion, lost that game. Michigan survived Nebraska. They, again, Michigan probably, you know, you could argue, did Nebraska give that game away? Did Michigan win that game? I sort of think it's a coin flip on that, but, you know, give them credit. They went into Lincoln and pulled out a win to remain undefeated. Kentucky is 6-0 for the first time since 1950. They just beat up LSU and Coach Orjan. Now, Kentucky is led by Mark Stoops, who is obviously here from Youngstown, one of the Stoops brothers, and they are just having an absolutely great season. Now, they will be they will be have their biggest tests coming up this weekend. So we'll talk about that on Thursday's show. Oklahoma State, I think they're probably the class of the Big 10, or I'm sorry, the Big 12 right now. They're undefeated. They're looking good. They're sitting at number 12. Ole Miss in Arkansas, if you did not see that game was back and forth and back and forth. And, you know, finally decided in the last seconds of that game, but 52-51, Ole Miss wins that game. Notre Dame survives a scare at Virginia Tech to win that game. Notre Dame is sitting, where are they sitting? I lost my train of thought. Notre Dame is at 14 right now. Boise upsets number 10 BYU, who now drops to number 19. Wake Forest, who is the last remaining undefeated team in the ACC, holds off Syracuse, and not a very good game from Wake, but they did win. And then Cincy, Coastal Carolina, Arizona State, Georgia, who beat Auburn, Michigan State, Florida, San Diego State, and SMU all win to remain in the top 25. Our Youngstown State Penguins beat former big-time coach Bobby Petrino and Missouri State. Missouri State actually took Oklahoma State, who I just mentioned was probably the class of the Big 12, to the wire. But YSU comes out, wins 41-33 over Missouri State, which snaps a three-game losing streak for the Penguins. Dimitri Crenshaw was 10 of 19 passing for 99 yards, two touchdowns. But listen to this. He had 22 carries for 195 yards and another touchdown. So the Penguins just ran the ball like crazy. Kind of like the old Jim Tressel days. Jaleel McLaughlin had 19 carries for 156 yards and a touchdown. So listen to these YSU rushing stats. 50 total carries on the day for 377 rushing yards, which is very, very good. This week they are on a bye, much like Ohio State. I wish, this is just my opinion, I wish YSU could sort of sync up with Ohio State's schedule and get some sort of, you know, and I know they're not always in charge of the scheduling, but get a home game when the Buckeyes are off, you know, so you can get all these Youngstown fans who are also Ohio State fans, get those eyes on the Penguins, get them some more, get some more butts in the seats, get some more eyes on the Penguins as they play. So again, just my opinion, but hopefully, you know, the Penguins can get back on track again. At Indiana State, they're going to take them on 10, which is October 23rd. All right. So last note I want to get into before we close out the show here. So here is what a hypothetical 12-team playoff would look like. Now, I just borrowed this from, I believe this was from CBS Sports. I can't remember the source. I apologize, but they threw out a hypothetical 12-team playoff format. We did a whole show back in the summer about what a 12-team playoff would look like. And, you know, here's what it would look like based on their scenarios. So Georgia, Iowa, Cincinnati, and Oklahoma would be the top four seeds, respectfully. They would get a first-round bye. Then you would have Kentucky taking on Penn State in an 8-9 game to match up with Georgia. Now, what I think they should do is play that game at the higher-seeded team in their home stadium on campus. I think that would be really cool. So you would have Penn State traveling to Kentucky, two teams that are fairly close to each other but don't play, that I can't ever recall playing. You have Michigan playing Wake Forest, Wake Forest traveling to Michigan. You know, they would advance, whoever would advance to face Oklahoma. You would have Ohio State and Alabama, Ohio State traveling to Alabama. And then the winner of that game would get the Cincinnati Bearcats. Again, this is hypothetical. This is not my list, but this was a list I saw and I just thought that was cool. And then you have Michigan State and Oregon playing in East Lansing. And then the winner of that game would play Iowa. So just something I saw this past weekend. I thought that was kind of cool. You know, something to look into. But just wanted to throw that out there for you guys. But that's all we're going to have for the show today. Again, remember that we have Ashley Collins from Bally Sports Ohio joining us this weekend. She is from Drennan Live. You can check her out and watch her regularly on Bally Sports Ohio. And she will again join us on Thursday for an interview. And, you know, we'll have our normal Thursday thought segment. We'll have a Browns preview with the Arizona Cardinals this weekend. And we'll talk a little bit of high school sports with Steve Leslie of YSN. So with that said, everybody have a great day, and we will see you on Thursday.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.